Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
At least he didn't call it your little music career.
Or use quotation marks in the air.
Like my dad does when he introduces me. He's like, this is my son, the actor. And I'm like, well, thanks. Oh. Thanks, Dad.
You have to technically make money.
All right. So welcome to the Daddy Therapy podcast. Hey, everybody. It's time for another marvelous...
Oh, I see what you did there.
Podcast. I don't get it.
Wow. I need therapy for that.
We are here to talk about Spider-Man.
Woo! So,
wow. Thanks, guys.
Coordinated woos.
Mm-hmm. Spider-Man Far From Home in theaters right now, getting high marks from your Rotten Tomatoes compilation of critics and such. But what you're probably wondering, what do four white guys think about it?
So who isn't?
This is what this podcast is about. I welcome today...
Podcast is about four white guys?
Yes.
It is now.
That's the new name.
Okay.
Four white guys.
And a girl in a pizza place.
And their dads. We have talented singer, songwriter, musician, the band Nuaru, also his own solo stuff, as well as the host of his own podcast about Texas called Lone Star.
Fair enough.
What?
That's the other 12 Lone Star podcasts.
I'm sorry. I'm not a fan. I haven't listened yet.
Fair enough.
No.
You know, our feed says as much as well, so.
Yes. No, actually, Lone Star Podcast, which is, they review the garbage culture out there, so you don't have to. Mm. It is Alexander Morgan, everybody.
Hello, fans, friends, and monkeys alike.
Hi, Alex.
There you go. Also, writer, producer, TV maven, educator, amongst many other things, Trey Calloway. Is here, everyone.
Hi, everybody.
And actor, thespian, man about town, raconteur.
General Curmudgeon.
Yes. Chris the McGann. General Curmudgeon, is this a hint that you're going to be the naysayer in the group?
No. Trey's here. I'm going to be a good guy on this podcast.
No.
I should mention, we haven't... was Trey here for Endgame?
I was not.
Okay, so...
I missed that one.
All right.
I was here for Infinity Wars.
No, you weren't.
I wasn't?
No, you did.
Which one was I here for that I was hateful of?
You just had a lot to say, no matter what.
Yeah. You had...
No, he had
an after-the-fact complaint about Infinity War.
You were here for it.
I wasn't here, but then I chimed in later.
I remember you specifically saying you were upset because the deaths didn't mean anything in Infinity War.
I did say that.
Well, it actually is a good lead-in because clearly the deaths mean something in this movie, Spider-Man Far From Home. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I went in a little trepidatious about was that I loved the first new
Homecoming.
Spider-Man.
Homecoming.
Yeah, okay, let's call it that. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Tobey Maguire?
It was... No.
Great.
Not going that far back. I loved that one because it was such a palate cleanser after the death and destruction of Infinity War. And is that the right timeline? Am I going in the right direction there? Sure.
No,
anyway.
Civil War?
I think it came out
after Civil War.
Well, it came out at a time where we needed lightness.
Yes, definitely.
And it was a great self-contained story that didn't rely on the rest of the universe completely, even though it had touches of it.
Yeah.
That's right. It came...
Yeah, it had to have been
after Civil
War. There might have been one more movie after
that's where
after
he
it,
was introduced.
Like, yeah.
Anyway, my point is, it was a nice... respite to have kind of a self-contained story, and the reason I liked that is the reason I was a little worried about this one, because it was clearly coming on the heels of this massive end of a saga, and how important was it that was part of the story, and I will say initially, only kind of, I mean, it was a presence, But yeah. It didn't seem to overwhelm it. Let's just get quick reactions. And by the way, this is the non-spoiler section.
Right.
We will very quickly just get reactions, and then we'll get into spoilers and give you plenty of warning, and the klaxon alarm will go off to wake you up.
Won't they feel it in their spidey sense?
Yeah.
Peter Tingle.
Yeah. All right. Spoiler alert. That's a common joke in the thing.
That's great.
I actually kind of like that. Alex
that's
Morgan.
That's weird. Father.
Oh, that's right. I forgot to mention he's my son. We saw this together, sat next to each other, had a blast together, I think. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I actually, this is a short quip, right?
Yes.
I very much enjoyed it. More than I thought
Trey,
I would.
Trey, what did... No, go ahead.
Period.
No,
did you have a further thought?
Funny enough, have no other thoughts about it.
Oh, okay.
That's it,
cool.
Yeah.
All right.
I also saw the film with my oldest son, and we both loved it.
Yeah, excellent. Oh, we are keeping it short. Chris, yes.
I saw the film with no one I was related to, and I enjoyed it. I thought there were a lot of great moments.
Yes.
In an okay movie.
All right.
There we go.
Oh, just okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of great moments. A lot of great moments.
I thought it was better than okay, and the things I am going to be picky about, I also kind of reminded myself, this feels very much like a Spider-Man comic. The things that I could quibble with very much happened in the era of Spider-Man comics that I would read. Because if you spend a whole lot of time trying to think in terms of logic and scientific logic and tech logic, you are going to poke holes all throughout villain.
Right,
here,
right.
Let's just talk about some of the things we liked and didn't like. I liked Jake Gyllenhaal, and I liked the villain. Another thing I was a little concerned about is because we've already kind of gone through the Spider-Man classic villains, at least in the early iterations of the Spider-Man movies, going back to Tobey Maguire. And in my own mind, I was thinking, I just would like to get to a Doc Ock again. I would like to get to a Hobgoblin again.
Instead of auxiliary villain from, like, butt face, farts in your face.
Because they are starting
to... Although I'd watch that.
I'm hoping they're bringing in Stiltman for the third one.
Oh, boy. But I enjoyed this. I thought we have to kind of tiptoe around this, but the villain that eventually revealed himself, I liked that the stakes were relatively low. There was still a threat to the world at some point, but ultimately it was, again, a relatively self-contained story within the universe of Peter and his world. And, you had some thoughts, Trey.
Well, one of the things that I'm most overwhelmed with joy about right now is that I don't have to be the negative Nelly in this podcast. And that's McGann.
It's clearly,
that's his role this time.
The curmudgeon.
I love that it's a rotating role, by the way.
He's relaxed into his seat.
Yeah, he really is. One of the things that I would say in the non-spoiler category about this film is that it is the first Marvel movie I have seen, maybe ever, that didn't feel like it needed 45 minutes cut out of it.
Yeah,
and maybe that's, I've said this before, I've made this qualification before, maybe I've been working on TV too long, but I do think it is a cornerstone of most of the Marvel fare, and I don't know whether it has to do with VFX budgets and having to justify multiple teams of effects houses, but like it always feels too long. It always overstays its welcome.
Yeah.
In my opinion, by about 30 to 45 minutes. This one, I was on for the ride. I never got tired of it. It was paced perfectly, and it was when it was time to be done, it was done. Mm-hmm.
And when the inevitable big battle comes at the end, which is by no means a spoiler, it came at the right time, and it felt about the right length, and didn't pull a rug out from under us with another additional battle because they felt like they had to.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're getting us there. I think it's the script's even aware of it because there's a line that's like, so that's all the explanation you need? You guys are used to lying, aren't you? And
snip,
they just
snip,
move
snip,
on.
Snip.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And I think it helps because that it is somewhat self-contained, again, in storyline with just references to previous events. Also, one interesting thing about the way it was plotted is that there is a point where it feels like it's wrapping up by design,
right?
And clearly doesn't. And, right. And there is something that it does have to, but that didn't feel false or forced. By that time, I certainly was sitting there in the movie going, yeah, this ain't done yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Any particular thing about the movie that you liked the most, Alex?
I think exactly that. I guess I just was too gullible and bought right into it. Because I even turned to you and I was like, isn't that guy a bad guy? And you lied to my face. And I'm like, no.
Good. Just like any father should.
Yeah, exactly. But it had like the whole, I heard this term earlier, and it's usually in reference to video games, but they had like the whole chasing the MacGuffin thing, where it's like there's like the elementals, you have to kill the four elementals. Oh, this is... Spoilery.
No, that's in the trailers.
Okay. Yeah. And so, like, that sort of, like, hero's plot thing sort of, like, sets us up for that drop into the real plot point. Right. And I found that, though clearly divisive, like, really satisfying for that little contained story.
Yeah.
So I think that whole switch and, like, the stakes sort of secretly rising at that moment felt very satisfying to me.
And also just the Peter Parker story, I think they did stay true to the idea that this is... a teen, an older teen going through what a person of that age does. And it is the thing that's always been good about the character, which they, you know, dipped into a little with the old Tobey Maguire series with great power comes great responsibility crap.
Yeah. Right.
but they're really digging into the idea that this is a young man who, like most young men of that age, have ambition to be grown up, but when they're actually faced with the reality of being a grown up, there are consequences that come with that.
Yeah, I think we're just avocational film critics here. I read it's Ty Burr from the Boston Globe who I thought very aptly described this film as not really a superhero movie, but actually a wholesome teen comedy disguised as a superhero movie.
And that's
what I really liked about it. Because it was true to that Peter Parker experience.
This is the new version of Zapped.
Yes.
Zap 2. That is a reference that I hope people get.
That only these four white guys in this room.
And I only get because it's a reference in another podcast that I've listened to.
I want to just climb on that too and say specifically, like, painfully slow. So this was a teen like story. Because I remember... Oh, and this killed me during this whole movie. I remember going to Europe with a girl that I really liked in high school. Having a whole plan to, like, tell her that I liked her and buying her a necklace in Italy, not in Venice, in Rome. In Rome, so it was slightly different, but like the whole time I'm like, oh God, was I this stupid? I was this stupid.
Oh God.
But then during the movie, did you do the Spider-Man hand thing just to make sure that you weren't Peter Parker?
Yeah, I mean, I checked a couple times. I was like, hang on, do I remember a giant fire monster? I mean, I had some weird dreams, so maybe, I don't know.
Maybe in the multiverse.
Yeah, I was just, there was a lot of it that I was like, oh no. Young Chris was so stupid.
Is this what made you a curmudgeon about that?
I think we're being honest with ourselves.
Freud would say.
Wait, about this movie or just in general? Because yes, in general. There was a lot of that I could really relate to.
Excellent.
Is I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that they have nailed in both of the Spider-Man movies is that there is a sense of that these are real, you know, that age kind of emotionality going on that we can, even as those of us who are like super old, like me, can still remember, or even kind of, you know, a throwback to something is like, oh God, I was that awkward and that, like, all the stakes seem so much higher. And that's kind of what's interesting is that this guy is a superhero. He's been in space. He has seen some crazy shit. The most important thing to him is about connecting with this girl. So anyway,
I would just say I bonded with him as a character a little bit, if only because I appreciated that he wanted a break from it all.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Right? So whatever spandex fatigue I was suffering going into the film, like I was like, oh, yeah, I'm with you. You need a break from this, too. And
we're,
and there's something nice
actually,
about
I like that. It's funny because one of our regular snarkers, Jason Kelly, emailed me back in response to this podcast saying, I'm marveled out, man.
Yeah.
Get back to me in a bit. And I'm
they
like,
know it, too.
This actually was, again, a great palate cleanser at the right time. Mm-hmm. So kudos to Marvel for that.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor. Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
Let us move on now to, here is the klaxon alarm. So that McGann can cur his mudgeon all over the place. Is that even a thing?
It is now. I'm going to go home and cur my mudgeon everywhere.
We need some wet wipes in the studio.
Peter tingles on the other side of the room.
Now we can dig into both good and bad, but be a little more specific. I will start and get a little more specific about the idea that Tony Stark was such a presence in this, which, again, was a little bit of a fear of mine because I didn't want it to rely so much on previous events, but knew that was going to be unavoidable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How they folded that in various ways. For one, the In Memoriam video at the very beginning.
That was so good.
It's cool. Is fantastic. Yes. Yeah. It was immediately, I was like, this was made by kids. This is kind of a great, this is so perfect. And they used the use of Whitney Houston's, Whitney Houston's version of I Will Always Love You, over
the
Marvel
logo
at the beginning was fantastic. And the fact that he was this kind of fallen hero and his presence is everywhere, even on their trip, he's just kind of hovering. He was a father figure, which Peter hasn't had in a bit, and how that played into later his relationship with Quentin Beck, who is Mysterio.
It was nice the way they used Favreau, too, as connective tissue.
Exactly.
Actually, yes, I thought his further development with how they, he, almost more like a big brother or puffy uncle.
Puffy uncle.
So all those things, all those fears I went into this movie with in terms of just like, I just want it to be its own adventure. I got that, and I still got a little connectivity that didn't feel like it was overwhelming. Goods and bads, spoiler edition, who wants to go?
I would say that professional issues aside, which I can't really discuss after signing a Marvel NDA of my own.
Ooh, wow.
I
dropping that.
I loved getting...
Well, I signed something with Marvel,
it's
too.
It's fine. No,
I'm subscribing to a couple of new comics.
I will tell you the story when the mics are off. At any rate,
God damn it.
I really, really... really loved getting to see Mysterio. I loved...
See, I have no relationship with Mysterio.
He's one of my favorite villains.
Really?
And I think part of that is because of the period that he was first launched in, and so I love that they sort of held on to some of those retro elements.
Can you guys
the bubble
give us...
helmet and the green smoke and all that stuff was just very, very cool. And
can you give us some background on his appearances?
Yeah, go, Chris.
I mean,
and now it's time for Nerd Corner.
I mean, I think they did a pretty good job of establishing him in the Marvel Universe, kind of true to his origins, right? Mm-hmm. He was a disgraced stuntman who got brought down as in crime and had been using his stunts and illusions to make himself look like a hero. And he got brought down by Spider-Man, by Daredevil, I think he was introduced in Spider-Man, but Daredevil had something to do with it.
I think Daredevil was a big part of it.
And then turned himself into a life of revenge upon Spider-Man for like ending his illustrious career.
Right. Yet with a 21st century holographic hallucinogenic spin, which was super cool.
Those
sequences are arresting and kind of amazing to watch.
That was one of my favorite moments, was that like crazy acid trip moment of where like not knowing exactly where reality fell. Like, not only did that was that clearly like the point for Peter Parker, but like I was like, where are we? Yeah. Where's ground zero here?
Which, by the way, I think in large part is due to the way the director gave you these POV moments for Peter Parker.
Yeah.
That were your Peter Parker POV.
Yeah, ooh. There we go.
Which
Peter
really
Parker
like
picked a POV.
But even just some of the metaphorical things, like the snow globe motif, and a lot of those things are really well thought out. I thought, and like these kind of like really wonderful hippie images.
It showed a weirdly specific of Mysterio's understanding of who Spider-Man like was and could be, like the motifs, right? It was really trippy, and the illusions were great.
And that's also one of those things where in the moment I was like, oh, this is crazy. This is wild. How could he have possibly programmed this in the amount of time he had to get there? Unless his technology is so intuitive that there's some AI going on where they're going, oh, we know what to do.
Yeah, that checks out.
They've been in, Peter's head. He had Stark's glasses on for 40 seconds, so he sucked his memories out of there. But again, that was one of those moments, and maybe that's an issue. That one of the things. So we'll just put it out there. The ability that Mysterio, Quentin Beck has to kind of build this thing and make it so realistic is like ridiculous. I mean, it's just kind of like, even though they explain it well with the drones and the choreographed destruction and that sort of thing, there are so many things that could go wrong with that. And that is where I had to kind of step into this is a truly comic book story maybe not aimed for the analytical intellectual.
Yeah,
not type. At all. Yeah. Not at
they
all.
Did themselves a disservice by picking up that piece of the projector and being like, wow, it's so real. It's like, clearly this is not the same like depth of reality that's going on.
Right.
Yeah. But still a modern day spin on smoke and mirrors.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But was that your issue?
No. I Trey said it was perfectly paced. For me, I guess there was an expectation that one of two things was going to happen. Either we were going to get to the end of this movie and Mysterio was going to be a hero the whole time, and we were going to set up a Spider-Man back to my house, I guess would be the third one.
Spider-Man stuck in customs.
Right. So we were going to get to the end, and Mysterio was going to be revealed as a villain like right at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to see like a setup for the Sinister Six.
Here he goes.
Or the reveal was going to happen and the fight with Mysterio was going to happen. And so, like, because I knew he was a villain, because I figured, I didn't think they would leave it as a cliffhanger thing. I was just like, let's get to the reveal. There was a, I've always had kind of an issue with Flash, so some of his presence seemed weird to me. Mm-hmm. In the MCU. So there were just like some weird, weird pacing issues for me where I was like, all right, I know this is coming.
Because of your knowledge of
Mysterio. That makes perfect sense because I felt the same way. Admittedly, like, you know that he is duplicitous.
Right.
And so, although I thought Gyllenhaal played it really well, I was nervous because when he first popped up, all I could think about was Okja. All I could think about was one of the most broad, over-the-top performances I've ever seen in my life.
That was absolutely
and
ridiculous.
And so I was like, oh, God, please don't do that. But then I thought he played the duplicity really nicely, except that, like you, I knew I didn't trust it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right?
But see, I think that partly because of your knowledge of canon and knowing where it was likely to go, and I was just vaguely aware of that fact. Mm-hmm. So when I lied to his face, basically, and I don't think I said no. I think I shrugged and went, nah, which is trying to be as noncommittal as possible.
That's literally what you said.
Again, you reading into my...
Should we leave the two of you alone?
Remember, this is the Working Out Daddy Issues podcast, disguised as a pop culture podcast.
I feel like there's an audience for that. You should just shift gears entirely.
Fortunately, large audience for that.
I thought that the performance and the way it was... I actually, to his credit, I think Gyllenhaal's performance was exactly that. I think he was doing exactly what people who know the character was expecting.
Right.
I was kind of somewhere in the middle, and Alex was somewhat oblivious to yeah. where it was headed. Mm-hmm. But he played it in a way, in my thinking, was he's way too sympathetic. He's way too nice. But in a nuanced way, because if you bought into his openness and warmth to Peter right away, then you're like, oh, this is there. Maybe they're going to be like the team. Is he going to be an Avenger one day? Whatever.
But there's something interesting about that adult versus teenager divide, where maybe the older you get, the more suspicious you are, the more informed you have become, and then the younger, you're like, Peter Parker's clearly someone in need of reassurance, and. Mm-hmm.
I just to his credit, I thought Gyllenhaal's performance was that great fine line of he was warm and welcoming, and he portrayed a good guy duplicitously in a great way. I thought that was a nuanced performance.
The only thing that bummed me out was the whole like Ocean's 11 scene reveal after that, where like it was like everyone who's involved had their little like moment, and for some reason that felt really
the crew
kind of forced to me.
I mean, I get it.
No
actor thanks their crew.
that's exactly what
well, that's
at.
Just cold but true.
I think that was an attempt to say this wasn't some mastermind that did everything himself.
Right.
You know, they were trying to ground it a little bit in reality that this is that, and I also like the fact that there another element of bringing Stark into this is that reminding you that as much as he was like this whole in memoriam thing at the beginning, and that he was elevated to this these great heights and will be remembered as this martyr, he pissed
jerk.
People off, and he was kind of a jerk, and he rubbed people the wrong way in a very big way, to the point where it's put some people over the edge. So
my other thing, I was thinking about the pacing thing, and I guess this isn't a pacing thing so much as a tone thing. Homecoming for me is such a, I don't know if perfect movie is the right word, but it's such a great movie from tip to tail. Michael Keaton, I think, is one of the most threatening bad guys in the Marvel universe, because there is a real sense of like, this is a man who will kill anyone who gets in his way, in a way that I don't think you see from like a lot of the other villains. Mysterio, even with a gun to Peter's head, didn't feel as threatening to me. There's just like inconsistent tone stuff. Tone may not be the right word. There's just inconsistencies. There are so many great highlight moments for me in this. So many great laugh moments. So many great touching moments. The scene with Happy in the airplane was like so touching. The blip back basketball game footage was so funny. that in between those like really great moments, I was just kind of like, okay, like we're moving.
Look, I think if we compare it to Homecoming, Homecoming really was incredibly well crafted. I mean, Alex and I were talking about that as we walked out, because I was so happy with that movie because of everything it did right. And that, you're right, I think Michael Keaton's villain in that was exactly what I needed at that time, which is just this guy who gets pissed off and has the tech and then just goes after him. It's a one-on-one battle. And that climactic battle at the end of Homecoming, I was absolutely caught up in. I mean, I was concerned for a character that I knew was going to survive because he had to be in the next movie. And it was like a great victory when he was able to come out of that carnage, that pile of whatever he came out of.
I still feel that when I go back and watch Homecoming. I'm still like, ugh.
So, so this suffered, if it suffered from sequelitis a little bit, I get that, because we can't help but compare it to that previous movie.
Sure.
I still ultimately found it very satisfying, even with, and I agree with everything you're saying. I think I just kind of came out of it. I go into these things with pretty lowered expectations, even now. Even now, this is one I was really worried about, like for all the reasons I said at the top. It was like, are they going to start to? I just didn't know. I couldn't feel it. And I was so happy with the adventure I went on.
Right. I was also very happy with the consistent relationship dynamics that are at the heart of it. I mean, for one thing, obviously, there is the Tom Holland Zendaya, of it all, but also the just being able to see, Marissa Tomei and Favreau and their sort of relationship. arc, and I was amused by the Ned and Betty of it all, which began and ended equally abruptly, which was fun to see. And they just I liked the way they just kept those dynamics bubbling underneath all of it.
Yeah.
I liked the use of for those of us who were music fans in the room, which is all of us, the sort of kitschy Euro pop. Yeah. Source tracks that were placed throughout, and I like my pal Giacchino's score was also strong in this one.
Yeah,
yeah, it definitely stuck out to me too.
So musically, it kept my attention too.
Yeah,
let's begin to wrap up here. And one of the things I want to do is talk about what is set up with the end credit sequences. There are two, and clearly, and one of the things in Peter's end credit sequence is basically a reboot,
right?
Suggestion,
right?
Which may circle back around to one of the comments I made earlier. Is well, we see J. Jonah Jameson, and he is now a vlog commentator who it looks like along the lines of. Who's the guy that the very incendiary
Alex Jones?
Yes, a slightly milder Alex Jones kind of version of that. I didn't mind that. That's J.K. Simmons in there. It was a great little cameo.
Oh,
but didn't like it?
Oh, no, I loved it so much.
Good.
Like
had that curmudgeon face. I can't tell anymore. It's the beard.
It's a neutral face. That's my neutral face. Is curmudgeon. I've got resting curmudgeon face. I loved it. Like fully every. Everyone in the theater like jumped and screamed because there is no one better to play J. Jonah Jameson than.
Does this possibly mean that now they can circle back and they can bring us Doc Ock again?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah, I think that's.
Can they bring us the Hobgoblin and the Green Goblin?
Yeah,
Or both?
Yeah.
and clearly it sets up the new era for Peter, which is he's been exposed,
he's outed,
is he. Is he a bad guy or a good guy? Mm-hmm. And then there's that
MJ's
whole
at risk and
duality that he has to deal with. And his family's MJ's at risk, Aunt May is at risk. Yeah. Everybody knows
he was a reluctant hero, and moving forward, he'll be a reluctant villain.
And what do we think of the very end tag scene?
What the hell?
Well, see, here's the problem: you haven't seen Captain Marvel.
I guess that's true.
I haven't either, so I may be in the same spot.
That's why I felt so out of left field.
Yeah, it means nothing to you if you haven't, because literally it's one of the few Marvel movies that have been out that have a lot of elements in it that have been in none of the other movies.
So if
you haven't seen Captain Marvel, you really don't know what's going
on
in that one. Do you want to explain it, McGann?
At the end of Captain Marvel, Carol took the Skrulls into space to find a new planet, and she had a relationship with Fury, and it looks like she took him there as part of a vacation thing. So, for me, it seems like what they're saying is, and who knows if this is a red herring early on, that the second phase, now I'm trying to remember how Marvel structured everything, the second saga that will start with the fourth phase of Marvel movies.
Oh, Jesus.
I know, right? is going to be the Secret Invasion.
We're going to post the Venn, not the Venn, we're going to post the graph.
Yeah, it's going to be
chart
the
up
is
on
this a Guardians thing?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, it's a whole world. It was an Avengers crossover was Secret Invasion, where the Skrulls had come to Earth and had replaced like Jarvis when he was a human butler and not a robot.
This sounds familiar.
Yeah, and so it seems like that's what they're teeing up. That will be the next big storyline, which is kind of a bummer because there's so much stuff they could have done with Kang and Adam Warlock and whatever. But who knows? That might be full on red herring.
Well, Adam Warlock, it's suggested should be Guardians 3, right?
Probably, hopefully, hopefully.
All right,
But I think, and then they
even
also
in your hope, you're curmudgeon.
I know, right?
Curmudgeonly.
That's me
again. It's not me this time. That's all I'm happy about.
I walked out
smiley.
I'm so happy right now. I'm going to float out of this room.
And as soon as you said Trey, I was like, nice. It's nice for me to not be the bad guy. And here I am just sliding back into my role.
Any other hopes for this character going forward? I, for one, hope that Tom Holland has the part locked up for life. I want to see him grow with the part.
Yes.
I can't, we haven't mentioned him really at all during this, and that's because I gave him such praise on the first one, I think, that he's just, I mean.
He's the guy. He's the guy.
He's nailing it, yeah. And I couldn't be happier with the way the character's being portrayed.
He's the Hugh Jackman of Spider-Man.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
I mean.
It's good.
That's good. That's that. You know. Yeah. You know what? Indelibly. Right. Yeah. For better or worse, he's got it. Yeah.
Which we were talking about. How are they gonna? This is a tangent. How are they gonna pass the torch for X-Men and for Wolverine? Is there gonna be a baby Wolverine?
I'm excited to see what they do with the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and Roland.
You take the claws now.
Well, there's a question for you, because I love the X-Men and what it's become is just so depressing. Mm-hmm. And this last movie was such a bomb that it's barely even. A blip. Nobody even has thought about it. Do they, if they're going to bring X-Men into our new Marvel universe, do they reboot those classic characters or do they come in at a different era, do you think? Because is Hugh Jackman so linked to Wolverine that do we need to see Wolverine again?
I don't ever need to see Wolverine again.
I think that's a mistake, right?
I would agree with that.
But, so at what era can they come in?
I mean, there's a lot of eras that took Wolverine out of it. I mean, after Logan, the comics killed him off at about the same time, maybe a little bit before.
Right.
And kind of specifically for that, they reached a Wolverine fatigue where books weren't selling if Wolverine wasn't in them.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of classic X-Men characters that aren't Wolverine that I could Cyclops, Jean Grey, Iceman, your classic five. Dazzler gets a lot of weird screen time, and even if people don't know who she is, as soon as they see her in a recognizable way, they'd be like, oh yeah, that's Dazzler.
Who would you like to see then?
I would love them to roll Deadpool and Cable in as is. I want to see what they do with X-23 now that they introduced her in Logan. I wouldn't be mad about a new Hellfire Club kind of situation, because we need a new White Queen. January Jones did not do anything for me, and Sebastian Shaw was a waste, and all of those 60s villains that they killed off in First Class. We could redo all of those.
Talk about a blip. By the way,
thank God you have Chris McGann on this podcast. I just want to say that right now. I'm over here going, I like the relationship dynamics. And he just made a deep dive into the MCU.
There's maybe about 70% of that I had no idea who he's talking about. I will also mention one thing that's kind of floating out there that has yet to see the light of day, and if they're smart, they'll probably just kill it before it gets anywhere, is New Mutants, which was supposed to have been released three times now, and they were trying to make a superpower teen horror movie film, and it apparently is terrible.
I want to see it so bad.
They might have reshot the entire thing by now, and the disappointment there is that New Mutants was a title I loved when it was what it was.
Yep.
It was basically X-Men Jr., which a bunch of funky kids who were in second tier.
Wasn't that kind of the Gifted?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Yeah. So many other shows and other series and other attempts at that sort of thing. So they tried to kind of take a complete left turn with it. But It was a really, I loved that book because I was an X-Men fan.
Because you were a New Mutant.
And I was,
Still
but it was also a very inventive book. They had some weird artists and some great storylines on there. And it was that kind of, these are younger people grappling with, teen issues as well as having superpowers. And it's a good concept if it's executed well. And they may never come back to that.
Yeah. Mm. I don't know. I do. I mean, I'm itching to see it. I think it's going to be bad, but I want to see it so bad.
You want to see it because you want to hate it
so bad. No, I don't want to hate it. I just want to know what it is. Because even though they may have reshot the whole movie and it's bad, I think part of that might be just hero fatigue and expectation.
Yeah.
Because if it is a horror movie that centers around mutants and people go, oh, it's X-Men stuff, I can see them being like, this isn't what I wanted. So I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, what's next on the slate?
Star Wars.
In the Marvel universe.
We don't know.
Because now we're kind of in a very big break.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like they're taking a lot of their attention away from big tentpole movies. They're going to introduce probably a ton of stuff through Disney XD, which will debut at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be totally fine with concentrating on those smaller stories for a little while and not inundating us with this next saga until they get it all together.
Yeah.
Here's one idea, though. Would it make sense, after some time, to do a major motion picture Daredevil reboot? I want it.
Yeah,
I
that's think some wishful it thinking. Done.
I know.
I think they're going to step away from that for
you
a while.
You think so?
I do.
Oh, I want that so bad.
I'd love to see Daredevil introduced in Spider-Man 3. I think he'd be a perfect comparison or companion for Tom Holland's local neighborhood hero section of the universe. And I think Daredevil would be a huge addition to that, especially since he's also kind of that.
You just made my Larry tingle go off.
I'm leaving the room.
Yeah. I'm super uncomfortable right now.
Wow, and you're not even my son.
No.
All right. Let's wrap things up. Tell me, Alexander Morgan, what do you have going on? Tell us about your new music and your podcast.
Oh, you know, it's happening.
I bought it. I bought it.
That feels so antiquated to me that gave me so much excitement.
I bought it.
I just released a new single with my band Noaru. That's Noaru. It's called Comprehension. You can find it on all the streamies. And my podcast, Lone Star Podcast, it's the one that's not about Texas. It's the one, and it's also the one that's not a rabbi and a priest talking about Texas issues in different
churches.
Oh,
is that real?
That's a real podcast.
Oh, man. I'd listen to that, too. Yeah, okay.
We're going to do a Lone Star Does Lone Star. So we'll see how that goes.
Is it about Spaceballs?
I wish. I really wish.
Spaceballs?
Lone Star? That was the superhero's name in Spaceballs? Yeah.
It's about bad stuff.
Oh, okay.
It's about all the poorly reviewed stuff.
Lone Star meaning one star review stuff.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We consume garbage content, so say it with me. You don't have to. Yeah, exactly.
Good. Trey Calloway? You're going to watch New Mutants then?
Oh, shots fired.
Yeah, actually, if you guys have a suggestion for a movie or TV show that is Lone Star worthy, Alex and I are going to be. I have a guest episode coming up, so you know, feel free to give us your suggestions.
I'm letting him on.
All right,
Trey Calloway, tell us about the thing you can't tell us about.
No, I will not talk about that. I just wrapped up on Station 19 on ABC, and now I am working with Imagine.
Oh, you survived the Shondaverse.
I did. But also NDA's there. I'm working on a Chinese project with Imagine and about to go to Japan this month for Amazon and staying busy, traveling a lot.
Excellent. All right. And that Marvel thing? Did you want to mention that?
Nope.
Chris McGann.
I'm casually slipping my resume to Trey.
You're too negative for me.
I mean, I'm in trouble. He knows that I'm hard to work with, so it's fine. I actually have a movie that's on the festival circuit right now called Reborn, which probably is only a one-star thing, and I'll...
Oh, come on.
I'm just kidding.
Curmudgeoning your own
movie. I know, man.
No, it's a fun little... childhood horror romp hopefully is ending a distribution deal or landing a distribution deal here shortly.
Right on.
Curiosity peaked.
Might be available to purchase.
Excellent.
Called Reborn.
Okay, excellent.
And you know, commercials and stuff. If you ever aren't fast forwarding through shows, you might see me.
Yeah, he's that cranky bearded guy in almost every commercial.
Oh no,
you
I'm very friendly in commercials.
Oh, that's right.
That's because I'm an actor. Larry.
That's right. The pretend McGann is so much more pleasant than the real McGann. And I am Larry Morgan. I am usually here and on K-Earth 101 in Los Angeles through radio.com. So thank you for joining us. We will definitely be back at least around the holidays, if not sooner. I will propose a non-superhero, non-Star Wars get-together sometime soon. Maybe
Rambo?
Rambo.
There's no other way to get four white guys together, though.
Oh, are you kidding? There's a Tarantino movie coming up.
Oh, now I'm in for that.
Four white guys talking about Tarantino.
No way.
Are you kidding me?
I'm deeply in
also
for that.
Also, a new Terminator?
New Terminator. Okay. Yeah,
lots
that'd be good
of
too.
Options. Yeah. All right, just get a monkey, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Woo. Get a monkey.
Get a monkey.
Get a monkey.